Our third patient, Pat, wanted viewers to understand what it means to be at the final stage of the cancer battle. Dr. Fagenberg has been guiding her care and helping her to understand the choices. Pat lives with her husband in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All help calls Polly snip snap.
I guess I was amazed that this happened to me. I try to be an upbeat person. I mean, that's my whole thing in life, is to be upbeat.
My mom is a very nurturing individual. She has been working at cancer institutions for a good part of her career.
For all the great contributions that you've made to the success of the NCCN.
I think that the cancer institutions were a good way for her to make a positive impact in other people's lives.
I guess advocacy work would be my word for it. It's helped me with where I am with cancer. And they support you in such a way that it's so worth it.
About 2 years ago, we both had a winter cold.
And just go under the tongue.
And we both had coughs, and mine cleared up and hers didn't.
Take that for you, Pat.
They had a feeling it may have been pneumonia. But instead of a pneumonia, they saw a lesion in her left lung, and that's when it started.
Deep breath.
They told her that she had non-small cell lung cancer, and it was stage 4, which is probably the worst of the lung cancers. When they did the MRI of the brain, they found lesions in the brain. They found 3.
My surgeon told me that I was going to die. That's what he said. That I wasn't going to have much of a life.
For 2 years, it's nothing but drugs, treatments, tests, PET scans, CT scans, bone scans, chest x-rays. We found out later that it then spread to the bone. We may not win this battle. And with that said, our goal is to give her the best quality of life we can at this point.
In Pat's case, we shifted from curative treatment to palliative treatment when she had disease in more than just the brain. It's a very emotional, for the family, for the caregivers, for the physicians, for the nurses, for everybody that's involved. It's a very difficult situation when you're talking to somebody, changing them from curative care to palliative care. We can still do things to extend your life, but we're not going to be able to beat this disease anymore.
It's hard.
All right, well, how about if we get started with doing your marching exercise?
Okay.
Physical therapy has enabled her to continue to be mobile. And as long as she's mobile, I think we can give her a quality of life that, she'll enjoy. She's a fighter, and I try to keep strong for her. And go on, take a day at a time.
Doing palliative care can be very rewarding. We make their pain better. We make them able to do what they weren't doing before. They're able to, spend time with their family.
I'm fishing!
You're fishing!
Very good!
I wanted to just be positive again.
Bald eagle.
I think that's what makes me feel like I have peace.
I got one right here.
Oh, wow, I'm winning.
And that I have hope.
It's my turn.
And people are going to have to like it or lump it, And that's how I felt about it. Everyone seems to see the negative sides of cancer care. And I've been able to see the positive side of it. And I think that has made a big difference in my life. It's just a small part to play in this war on cancer.
We're gonna battle this thing and see what we can do about keeping around as long as we can.
It's my life. I'm gonna live it the way I wanna live it, and I'm gonna live it with a sense of being, with a sense that I can do it. I can do this.
doctor's obviously making the choice to change from attempting a cure to a palliative care situation is a very difficult step to make. How do you decide when to make that change?
In Pat's case, you know, initially when you have somebody who's a stage four patient, you know, when she initially presented, you know, at first, you know, she only had disease that we call it oligometastatic disease. She had basically two lesions in the brain. And basically, at that point in time, we treated her with aggressive therapy, treating her with the most aggressive treatment in the brain, followed by surgery for the lung. Unfortunately, somewhere a couple years down the road, she went on to develop progressive disease. And at that time, she had disease in multiple spots. And at that time, the treatment changes. We're not treating somebody for, you know, with aggressive treatment anymore. We're treating a patient with, you know, what we've been talking about today, trying to extend their life as long as possible while trying to give them the best quality of life as possible.
It's such a, you know, an emotional time, and I think one of the earlier patients, Lisa, talked about it being a roller coaster, and this is really, you know, a lot of dips on the roller coaster there. I think what Pat tells us, though, is how much can be done. So when radiation and chemo and all the things we've been talking about during this discussion are not the best treatment, what can be done to make that person's life better? And in Pat's case, it was physical therapy. You know, you just saw, you know, what it meant for her, how her husband said, you know, this has really helped Pat. And it allowed her to do the things that mean a lot to her. And people, at every point in their illness, people that live a good life, they will live a good life. You know, Pat, cancer cannot take that away. This woman knows how to live.
It can't be easy to discuss this with patients. How do you talk about moving into supportive care?
Well, you know, every visit, really, patients come to us to ask us, what are the medical facts? What are the medical issues here? What are my options? And what is the best thing for me that day? And it might be, you know, do I lower the dose of pemetrexed, or it might be, do I send them for an extra boost of radiation? Or one day it's going to be, you know, the best option is not to do another chemotherapy treatment and not to do, you know, a re-round of whole brain radiotherapy. You know, I could make you better today and looking at your medical situation by intensifying the physical therapy, you know, doing more skin care to take care of that sore area that's been so troublesome to you. Do more about, you know, getting your digestive system in order. Do more about getting that pain under control. You know, help me with these dry eyes. These things will make my life better. You know, I can read, I can watch TV, I can get around more and go to that recital I want to do. And that is the essence of that discussion. You know, focusing on what's the right thing today. Radiation won't help those things I just mentioned. Chemotherapy won't help those things. Another surgery won't. And that's the way I think is best to do this, to kind of start out at the cold medical thing. What are the medical issues? What can be done from a medical standpoint? See where the person is in their illness and then try to tell that person what the options are. And if you believe that the best option is not to give chemotherapy, then you need to be very clear and honest about that and yet tell people what can be done to make their life better. And Pat had a good life in that video. She did things that meant a lot to her, and you saw from her family how much she meant to them.
Pat's story shows that palliative care doesn't mean that you stop treatment entirely. What should patients be offered at this point?
Well, it depends on the symptoms that patients are experiencing in regards to what treatment should be offered. In her case, the symptoms that she was having was pain-related from the disease progression in her bone, as well as some of the side effects she was experiencing related to complications from one of the medications she was on, was a steroid. So she was actually having significant weakness in her legs. And subsequently, one of the things that was very beneficial for her was getting physical therapy involved, as well as occupational therapy, to improve her quality of life. So it really just depends on the symptoms in regards to what patients experience, what's most appropriate for them.
You know, we have other therapies available for palliation. For example, in bone metastasis, we have bisphosphonates, which are given, they're pills, which are given. I think one of my concerns relates to the management of pain. and the underdosing of effective narcotics. And it's usually not the oncologist that has the problem. It's a lot of the other doctors that take care of the patients that are afraid about having the patient be addicted to a narcotic when they have a terminal illness. It doesn't compute, at least in my lexicon, that makes any sense. Because you're not worried about addiction, you're worried about pain control, and I think it's important.
Well, gentlemen, one of the things that you've made clear is that no current treatment is perfect. In the future, what are we looking for in regards to treating this type of cancer?
While we're happy that we're able to extend people's lives, what we really want to do is cure them. And the only way to do that is really to go back to the lab. You know, we talked about today what a great example Lisa's case was, that she went from having a serious incurable cancer to taking one pill a day and going on with her life. That's the kind of thing you can do for a human being if you understand the nature of the biology of their cancer. And there are labs all over the world trying to do that. And I think Lisa was a great example of where we want to go. And that's our challenge, and that's our goal.
Doctors, thank you for such a thorough discussion of advanced non-small cell lung cancer. But before we end our conversation today, what do you think are the key take-home points to be summarized?
I think one of the key points is that the future is brighter for lung cancer patients. When I first started 35 years ago, the median survival was 2 to 4 months for advanced disease. Now it's 12-plus months. And I think although we give the statistics to the patient, I think all patients are individuals, and they're not statistics. And I think the future is going to be individualized medicine.
There have been many advances in regards to what we talked about with systemic therapy as well as radiation therapy in these cases. And some of the where we need to go into the future is how to incorporate those and then try and figure out what's the best way to treat these people, what's the best way to improve outcomes while decreasing toxicity as we incorporate it, both of these modalities together.
My message to patients and physicians is that, yes, there are many treatments that do work, but what's the best treatment? Our job is to choose the best treatment for that patient because that will yield the best outcome for them.
Much of our discussion today has been based on guidelines from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. You can find these guidelines online at nccn.org. You'll also find a link to that site at discoveryhealthcme.com. Patients, their families, and their caregivers can also visit nccn.com. That's a new website for consumers with NCCN treatment summaries, information, and advice. Again, gentlemen, thank you for joining us today in this important conversation. And we'd also like to thank our viewers, and we hope today's program has given you useful information about caring for patients with non-small cell lung cancer. Also, we encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for the program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. All the graphics and references from the program are also available online. Finally, we'd like to thank the National Comprehensive Cancer Network for accrediting and for collaborating with Discovery Health on the content of this program, as well as our supporters, Eli Lilly and Company and Genentech. Once again, you can download the NCCN guidelines at nccn.org. I'm Maria Blakey for Discovery Health CME. Hope you have a nice day.